When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm Joe Rimmer, your host, and today I'm joined by Theo Squires. How are we, Theo?
Very, very tired after a long day on Saturday.
Yeah, well, don't worry. This will be a very uneventful pod. Sean Bradbury, are you ready for a quite boring and vanilla pod?
Yeah, don't know what we're going to talk about, to be honest. But looking forward to it. We'll find something.
Also joining us is Matt Addison, who Matt, in his spare time, is a referee.
Boo!
What an awful man. Are you going to apologise? Look into that camera and apologise to everyone.
I'm afraid I can't apologise. There's some things that I will be able to explain and other decisions. I think it's fair to say that I won't be.
Well, hopefully Howard Webb will ring me and apologise now for your mistake. Right, let's get into it, Theo. You were at Tottenham on Saturday. There is so much to go through. But, I mean, where do we start, Theo? I mean, I'm meant to be hosting this, but I don't really know where to start. Let's start with the obvious one. Luis Diaz, onside. Given us offside, crazy game, Liverpool robbed.
Yeah, I'd say so. Like, it happens so early in the game that you don't really know which way it goes if that goal is allowed to stand. Like, we can easily say that goal stands, it's a 2-2 draw. But then if Liverpool 1-0 up at that point when it's still 0-0, yes, they've had a man down, but we've seen them come back strongly when they've had man sent off already this season. They could easily dig in, put in a defensive display that gets them all 3 points. They get all 3 points at the top of the table. Like, after the results earlier in the day, Liverpool going into this match thinking, we've got a great chance to move top. And they've been robbed of that opportunity by so many decisions in this game. But it's a strange one looking back at that goal. Like, you see the through ball and he's clearly onside. It doesn't seem real when you see it disallowed. You think maybe they've got to like properly zoom in or something and there's something there that we've not seen. But for it to just restart straight away. Like, Kiefer was in the away end going, what's actually happened there? Because it was just so confusing for everyone. It was so surreal. You look at it and go, that doesn't seem real. And it's only the more times you see the replay that you go, that is a massive mistake. Yeah. What on earth has happened? And then you hear more and more coming out from, oh, the officials, it was a lapse of concentration. They thought the goal had been allowed on the pitch. It's just like, it's just a calamity there. It's an embarrassment. And the club statement last night was spot on, saying it's just completely question the integrity of the game, undermines it completely. And it's like, what chance do Liverpool have here? Like, so many decisions we can pull up, and I'm sure Matt will come through it in a minute. Yeah. But they just gave them no chance from start to finish. And when it is a goal as that, it's a great move, and Liverpool should be 1-0 up, and for it to just be pulled back straight away, it doesn't feel like a last-minute defeat because of how surreal all this does. It wasn't a real game.
Yeah, I mean, Sean, like, trying to unpick this is quite difficult. We know it was the wrong decision, and we now know the incredible series of tweets that Dale Johnson from ESPN put out on Saturday night. We now know why that decision, how they came to make that wrong decision. But is it not the most bizarre thing? Is it not that they couldn't have stopped the game at any point? Surely someone in the studio, in the VAR studio, would have been going, that's wrong. And I think most bizarre is that nobody said, right, stop.
Honestly, this is the unfathomable thing. Well, we were in the office for it, just to kind of lift back the curtain on the Echo process for all this. And like, in fairness to PG Moll, one thing I'll defend them on is, when there's an incident during a game, and we'll often do this because there are often incidents, whether it's an Everton game, Liverpool game, we'll contact, you know, their kind of press team and their sources and ask for an explanation. Yeah. And they're normally rapid, aren't they? Yeah, you know, they'll come back with, okay, it might be the party line, but they'll come back with an explanation that will fit within the rules or an interpretation of them, and you know, we'll put that out, and it might frustrate some people, but it is what it is. On this occasion, it was radio silence, and that just became deafening. And like, once the ball started rolling, you just thought, there's a serious problem here. And you know, I think we had a story up on the site with beIN Sport who had drawn the lines and gone, he's onside there. And then all, obviously the Dale Johnson stuff comes out, the statement comes out, and even the human error of the miscommunication, the initial miscommunication, which, you know, it sounds like England's gone, check and please, that was a goal, thinking that it was given as a goal on the pitch. Even that, I can buy that. I think there's a lot of people who are sceptical about that and are making kind of, you know, conspiracy shouts. And I always think you look for kind of incompetence first, and you know, there's a lot you have to go to prove that it's something more than that. But it is just unbelievable that they didn't then pull it back. You know, the whole thing about VAR is, you know, whether we insist on like perfection and we think that that's what it should deliver, it should certainly deliver checks and balances. You know, there's more than one person in that booth. You know, there's an assistant VAR, I think Dan Cook on this occasion, you know, there's a technician as well. I'm sure, you know, Matt would know more about exactly how the process works. But to not bring it back, even if, I know they've hidden behind this idea that once play's restarted, the protocol is you're not meant to do that. I think they just have to have a way over themselves there and say, this was such an unprecedented thing that it should have been different. But for me, the key point around all of the communication is like, I just don't think it's very professional. It's a bit unserious. It's too like chummy and matey. Whenever you hear things back, it's like, oh, Brooksy, mate, you know, I'm going to do this. And you compare
it's
that
awful,
to...
Isn't it?
It's mad.
Tails,
it's
like, all that nonsense.
Honestly, and I find that compared to cricket, you might say that this is a bit of an unfair comparison because cricket's a much more broken game. And, you know, one big decision that gets reviewed in cricket is never as big as a big decision in football because football's defined on moments, isn't it? Goals, red cards, whatever, penalties. Whereas, you know, cricket's a longer thing. But whenever they have a review, it's much more technical in its language. It's much more focused. It's the kind of process around it is just managed better. And I think that's the first thing that has to change now. They have to just professionalise, make it transparent, allow us to listen to it. Yeah. So not only to humanise the people who are talking, but to show they're working out so people can't ask kind of conspiratorial questions rather than just kind of competence questions. But yeah, it's that for me that there was the key error. And, you know, I still can't quite believe it.
What I don't understand is, right, if they're saying they can't call it back, play's restarted, they still know they've made a mistake. There is nothing stopping them calling play to a stop, going to the manager and saying, this is what's happened. We've made a big mistake. Yeah. Tottenham, can you just let Liverpool walk it in and then we'll carry on?
Put it on top, because obviously they had that, was it Leeds-Villa, where Leeds let Villa score? Is that right, in the Championship? Was it Leeds-Villa?
It might have been Brentford.
Leeds let someone score, didn't they? And like you say, they could have gone to the manager and say, okay, Tottenham, it's up to you. You make the decision now. And then if Tottenham said no, then all right, then that at least they've tried. But Matt, I mean, my question, you awful man, is why, and obviously the rule is that they can't stop the game after. But if it's a serious foul play incident, they would stop the game, wouldn't they? You know, if we're all playing here and you two are on the ball and you know, I put in a terrible tackle on Theo, potentially really hurt him, the referee can stop the game no matter what's going on and say, we need to deal with this. So why aren't the things in place for something like this for them to stop the game?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think on this occasion, I think the protocol is there, and the protocol is very strict, isn't it? That's the reason why it would have been. I know it's obvious to us now to go, look, it was a massive error. You've got to stop the game. You realise it was an error and you go back. But that would be both Darren Englund and the on-field referee, Simon Hooper, who I think, I mean, we don't know this, it's a bit speculative, but you can kind of see on the TV that it looks like he's pretty much aware as soon as he's blown the whistle.
Sorry to interrupt though, but Liverpool had a throw-in in Tottenham's heart. It's not, I can understand if Tottenham were like on the attack about to score, but at that point when you see him sort of listening to his earpiece, it's Liverpool with a throw-in in Tottenham's half.
The argument would be it would be a big thing for him to go against the protocol and against his bosses during that game.
You'd respect him if he did, though.
Of course, but in that moment, under that pressure, he's not probably 100% sure at that moment. He can't make something, you know, against the rules in that particular way, under that scrutiny and all of that sort of thing. It would have been the right thing to do, but I think it's probably unfair to expect that he should have done that in that moment.
Like, yeah. It was an embarrassment for the officials, no matter what unfolds, no matter what happens. But the way they handled it made it the most embarrassing outcome for them possible.
It's very similar, I think, to the... There was one where... I think it was an Aston Villa game against Sheffield United, was it? Where
the goal line technology
won. The goal line technology didn't work. The ball went in and they didn't do it properly and the protocol wasn't followed because they just assumed that the goal line technology would work and didn't check it properly. It kind of reminds me of that a little bit in that, yes, in a perfect world, you would have noticed that and rectified it. But actually, you know, in that situation, it's a lot more difficult to do than kind of 3 days
later.
It's
the technology that's broken. Like this one was human error, communication, whatever. Like, we all accept Hawkeye goal line technology because it's yes or no. It is very black and white. VAR isn't, but you still, the technology is there for the offsides. You know whether it's right or not. You can take your time and get the right call. The fact that the technology was right and it wasn't implemented properly, that is the big issue there.
I think that the taking your time is a big thing. I know, obviously, with VAR, since it's come in, there's been a lot of things of like, oh, we can't have 2 or 3 minute checks and it's got to take less time. I think what they've done here is just rush it and go, look, it's a clear decision. We don't even need to draw the lines. We can see that he's onside. He thinks that that's the on-field decision, so he says check complete, and it's just too quick. Yeah. What Sean said before in terms of that protocol, there needs to be a more decisive check of each thing of, is that the on-field decision? And until this moment, I don't think anyone really would
have
ever...
So you're saying we need a VAR team for the VAR team?
just a clearer process within that team, I think.
The language that's used, it should be more technical, shouldn't it? And just clearer, fundamentally.
But why? We can talk... It's quite difficult this because there's so many things to unpick, and I want to talk about Curtis Jones and obviously Liverpool's statement, the reaction to that. But you know, for me, the biggest issue with VAR, I've said it all along. Football is subjective. We are trying to perfect something that is imperfect and never will be. So you know, but if you're going to implement VAR, it has to be perfect from the word go. You can't learn from all these errors and just say, okay, well that's happened, unlucky. But we'll get this better. I mean, surely these processes, surely they should have foolproofed these designs and gone, okay, well, what happens if we make a mistake? What happens if the goal line technology doesn't work? What is the process? Can someone, can someone watching in a studio somewhere say, buzz the referee as soon as that and say, the goal line technology hasn't worked? The same with the VAR. As Sean says, it has to be really professional. And I don't like that people pile in on referees. You know, I think it's unfair. I hate the conspiracy stuff. That is total nonsense, and people need to get that out of their heads. And we all talk about refereeing as if it's the easiest thing. And I'm sure it's the hardest job on that football pitch. I'm sure is refereeing and getting everything right. You're never going to be able to do that. But they don't help themselves when you see all the ex-professionals, Clattenburg and Mike Dean telling their little chummy stories and their after-dinner speeches afterwards. It doesn't help when we go behind the scenes of the referees and they're all like, oh, Tails likes a drink and he gets loads in when we're on. I just think all of that nonsense doesn't help. It has to be so professional.
On the conspiracy thing as well, I think they've not helped themselves in that. There's been certain points this season where Howard Webb has done a TV show with Michael Owen, I think, wasn't it? Where he's done the thing and they've come out, but they've picked, five incidents or whatever it is and ignored some of the other ones. Yeah. There's no obvious, you could quite easily do that same thing, but go through every single incident. It might not have a half an hour slot on Sky, for example, but, why not put that on YouTube or whatever and go through on a Monday every week. They go live on YouTube. They go through, give you the audio, give you everything. Yeah. Because they could do that, for example, later today. Go through the audio, kill this conspiracy that, there's something stacking up against Liverpool, which we know is absolute nonsense. Yeah. But you just clear that straight away. It's kind of similar to the radio silence thing before that you mentioned of, how long it took them to come up with this statement. Yeah. You can stop that straight away. And it sort of feels like they're not helping themselves at the moment because there's certain things that you can just change and it just stops it straight away.
Just what you lads are saying on that, I think it needs a whole new culture around it, doesn't it? And I think that helps. That would help the officials. And it might make players look like villains sometimes, but I think if you made the whole thing transparent and mic'd it all up, and I mean, the conversations that happen in the VAR room, but also what we did here when the Howard Webb stuff happened, and obviously they released the one, didn't they, eventually, of the Van Dijk incident, the Newcastle one. And you can tell that the ref at least feels like he's under pressure a little bit, and you know the players are not quite haranguing him, but they're kind of questioning the decision and all of that. But you mic it up, and you know, and if players then are behaving in a way that isn't right and is a bit unfair on the refs, then we can all hear that as fans, as people watching on, and you get to make that kind of judgment. And this is why I'm surprised that, like, I remember writing a piece about this. I think it was after the Rodri handball incident, you know, obviously the City and Everton one. And there was a couple of other things around that time. Didn't Diaz get completely taken out by, was it the Brighton keeper? And it was actually was a goal, but then nothing happened to the keeper. There was a spate of incidents where you thought VAR should have intervened, and it hasn't. And like, found an old quote from Mike Dean where he's basically saying we can't mic up refs, and you know we can't kind of interfere with the inner workings of what happens on the pitch. And like, you know, refs will act in a certain way with players and the way they'll talk to them. It's important for their control of the game. But I just think all of that is a nonsense. We have to move beyond that. You have to change the culture around it, make it transparent rather than cloak and dagger, because then you take away the questions, don't you, around, well, what's their motivation? Because I think in 100% of the cases, the motivation will be panic, or incompetence is a strong word, but, you know, just the pressure they're under. And if you redefine the culture around it and show them to be the humans that they are, then, you know, people, the questions will change.
I don't even like the word incompetence, Theo, because I think it assumes that there are better people, or that we could do better, or, you know, you hear all this nonsense, ex-pros, get an ex-pro in, they'll sort it out. You know, like Jerry Barton going in the studio, he knows what a sending off is, he'll sort it out. All that, I think, is nonsense. But like Sean says, referees are human, they're going to make mistakes, but the process around them surely has to be better to help them and for them to help themselves.
Yeah, like, we don't hear from referees at all. They're able to hide behind these statements when they make mistakes and everything. And it has just got that suspicion around it. It's like, are there agendas? Are there corruption? It's not. They're just making human errors under pressure. But the pressure is getting more and more on top. So obviously they're going to feel the stresses of it. There has to be some way you can help them. Like, the quality of officiating does need to be improved. Like, we saw, was it the FA? They did this big look at grassroots football and just like, why are there not enough quality English players coming through? And they did this big project over 20 years going, we're going to win the World Cup however many years down the line, because this is what we're going to do. Do it with the officials. Make sure they're actually getting better quality training. They are there. They can handle the pressure. Mm-hmm. They've got the psychiatric help as well. Because let's be honest, Darren England and Dan Cook have had a horrible weekend, haven't they? They're not going to have slept. They're going to be turning off the phones because they're not used to going to get going out on the streets if they're recognised. There needs to be protection all across the board here. And the technology, maybe they need to be better trained with it. There needs to be something done to make it easier to implement. I know this is going back way before any of our time, way before the Premier League, but it was late 80s. They did mic up the refs. They did mic up the players. And I think it was an Arsenal game. And Tony Adams was absolutely livid at him swearing. And this was back when they didn't like swearing in football, at least in the public eye. And the refs got a bit of support for that one back then. But it was just a one game experiment. Yeah. So it's like, well, if we'd had it as part of the game, then there would be more understanding there. You'd see the human side to it.
The Van Dijk incident's interesting, it, because obviously we know he got fined and suspended for the way he behaved. But again, you get Liverpool fans who will have been sticking up to Van Dijk. But if we'd have mic'd up, I think we'd have known how, I mean, you could kind of see it, but we certainly would have known how he behaved, and we'd see how other players behaved every week.
I respect the VAR idea on that as well. The fact that the ref's coming out and saying, you're gone, you know, you're going to be gone unless it's an offside. Yeah. Like, the fact that he's in control of that situation completely, and whether you agree with the decision or not, because he's got that authority, you do respect it. And go, oh, fair enough, he is the professional here. But in football, it always seems to be of, we can't do this, we can't do that. We're sticking to the traditional roots of the game. Like, it was 10 years ago, we can't have technology. We can't have goal line technology. And it was only after Lampard's disallowed goal at the World Cup that maybe that would be a good idea. It's always looking backwards, clinging to these. Football was developed. The technology is there. Taking away VAR is not the answer. Improving it is. Yeah.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, I tweeted at the weekend that I wanted it gone because I just don't think it, unless it is completely, you're never going to get every decision completely correct, but unless it's completely transparent and really well implemented, I just don't see how it's helping. I think it is making life for referees. So, like you say, no one would have known who Downing, no one would have known who the fourth official was at the weekend if before VAR. Now it's like everyone knows everyone involved. And Darren England, you know, you worry for someone's mental health when he's made a bad mistake. He knows he has. His bosses are angry with him. Fans are angry with him. You know, where does he go for respite? I think that this technology is making it a lot worse. Just moving on a bit, Curtis Jones, obviously a decision that, you know, this is before Diaz, and splits everyone again. Matt, we'll start with you because we had a little chat about this before we came on air, but is the frustration with that one, is it, it starts with the still of Curtis Jones seemingly clearly making contact?
Yeah, and again, that's the VAR protocol that has sort of led to that being the case. I think it's a case of on-field, the referee is given a yellow card and he's described to the VAR, this is what I've seen, that's why I think it was a yellow and not a red. The VAR then, it's his job to say, well, I've seen it back. This is what I've seen. These are the differences between the two things. And that's why he's shown him that screenshot, because the difference is he says he's gone over with his studs up and it's therefore endangering an opponent. So the VAR thinks that the reason that that's best to show him that still is because that's the difference between what you think you've seen and what we've actually seen on the replay. For me, that should just not be a thing. I think that the first time that the VAR shows the referee on the field the thing, it should just be in full context, not slowed down. I think the only time you need a slowed down version on the VAR screen is if, let's say, there's four or five players around the ball, a lad comes in, puts the foot over the ball and produces a red card tackle, but you can't see at which point he's made the contact. There's too many players around it. Yeah. It's a bit sort of crowded around the ball and you need that clarity to slow down. But with the Curtis Jones one, that just wasn't the case. You can see the tackle in full contact, in full context. The contact is there, but there's no intensity. There's no kind of... there's no intention on his part. That's not necessarily relevant, but for me, it can go either way. It's almost a bit like the Virgil van Dijk one, in the sense of, I think Liverpool have been unlucky here, because either way, you could probably make an argument that the referee has made a wrong decision. I think if he sticks with the yellow, there'll be some people that say it should have been a red. The same with the van Dijk one. There'll be some people that say, yeah, he got the ball. There'll be some people that say it doesn't matter. Yeah. Unfortunately for Liverpool, it's one of like eight 50-50s that has gone, you know, the opposite way. In
to
the
offer
space
some context on this Jones one, I'm not sure how easy or aware you were of it on Sky, but they did show the replay afterwards to the fans when the decision's made, when the red cards come out, and there was that loud boos, ooh, that wince from the Tottenham fans. So obviously all of those of a Tottenham persuasion think it's the right call. And that's basically what you're saying there. It comes down to what side you fall on. Like us as Liverpool reporters, Liverpool fans will think he's been hard done by there. Tottenham fans will say it's a red card. Roles reversed. If it had been Basuma doing that to Jones, we'd all be calling for a red card. And they'd be saying, nah, he's been hard done by there. That's just part of football and the tribalism. That's bringing it back to the offside when that was clearly the wrong call. Those are the differences here. It's like, we want the technology to be flawless, but at the same time, we want them to make decisions on the game, and it all comes down to interpretation. Like, no matter how many games you watch, how many officials are in, they will make different decisions, whether they're using the technology or not. And we can go through so many decisions here, how there's no consistency, where you've got players waving imaginary yellow cards and they're not getting booked, when McAllister got booked at the start of the season for one.
The throw-in thing, you know, everyone delaying... time-wasting, that's gone, hasn't it? That's completely disappeared.
And then like, you had what, Joe Gomez and Van de Ven. Well, Van Dijk was technically sent off for that a couple of weeks ago.
By the way, we'll come to that, but we'll come to it.
stop
jumping in.
Pedro Porro, he got booked for taking his shirt off to celebrate the winning goal, but how many of those Spurs players went in the crowd? We saw Elliot and Jones booked for that against Wolves. a couple of weeks ago. There's so many decisions here, we can pull it back to other Liverpool games and go, hang on, we got a booking here, we got a red card here. Where is the consistency? Yeah,
just to jump in on the Jones one, I think you're spot on. Like, but he can count himself unlucky. I don't think his initial action was worthy of a red, but then it comes down to how much responsibility you think once his foot slipped off the ball and then it's gone high into the man. Is he responsible for that? Does that make it a red? You could argue all day about that, can't you? But I think what Matt said is absolutely spot on. It's all about the way it's framed then, isn't it? In terms of what the ref sees when he goes over to the monitor. I said this after the McAllister one. If you're serious about the game not being re-refereed by VAR, which is, you know, a phrase that gets thrown out there quite a bit, isn't it? I think if it's a red, the ref should automatically go over to the monitor and make a decision on his own decision, and to do so there should probably be minimal input in terms of what he's told from the VAR booth, but he should see, as Matt says, real time in context replay of it. And I don't think, again, that there's much context for a slow-mo. There's certainly no context for a still to be the first thing he's shown. And then I think with that, if you did that, you'd maybe get over this idea of it's a boys' club, it's someone kind of recommending to their mate that you do or don't do this. If it's the ref themselves reassessing their own decision, I think they might be more likely to overturn it.
I absolutely agree. Isn't
that
one?
Put more pressure on the refs, though, too? Because if you've got the VAR and he's not told you why he wants you to go and look at it, you think, oh, I've dropped a clang here. That's going through your mind because they're human there.
Isn't the problem with Sean's, and I on the whole agree, but the problem would be that's when you've given a red card. It's not, but the things you've missed, like, so, for example, the Jones one.
Yeah, yeah.
He would have to be told. My issue with it is I think that if you're reffing, you're in high pressure and you're reffing a game like that, as soon as someone says you might have made a mistake, human nature says you're probably, unless you're a very, very strong character, going to be swayed by someone or more than one person saying, actually, you know, you might have got this one wrong. And it takes a strong person to go over that camera and go, no, I got it right. I'm sticking with it. And again, it's just another thing that I think VAR introducing doubt and making it subjective. I mean, I, on the Jones one, again, I don't understand, you know, I kept saying, Andros Townsend, on the letter of the law, that's a send it off. If I run, trip and fall and my foot goes bang on Theo's foot, on the letter of the law, I've hurt Theo. But that doesn't, you can't just strip away context. You know, Diaz jumped for a header earlier in the half, elbowed their guy in the face, obviously didn't mean it, was looking at the ball. His elbows come back because that's how people jump. Elbows someone. You know, you don't then go, yeah, but you did make contact, so you are off. You have to go, how did that happen? It was an accident, you're okay. And with Jones, his foot rolls across the top of the ball. He can't control. You know, he basically wins the ball, his foot rolls across, there's a guy there. If there's a guy underneath him, you know, his foot just hits the ground. I just don't understand what did the referees expect Jones to do in that situation? He's won the ball, his foot rolls across it. It was a yellow card was sufficient, and I don't understand why you would move that on. And that is a problem, I think. You're just introducing doubt into the referee's mind every week, and it's happening so often. And it's a thing now, isn't it? When referees go to the monitor, how many referees have you seen? It might have happened one time I can remember that referees go, actually, no, my on-field decision will stick with that. They always overturn.
Michael Oliver did it once, didn't he? But that's the best referee, arguably, in the world.
Who
it took to do that, you can't.
Yeah.
You
know. He was fourth official, by the way.
Yeah.
Feels like a bit of a waste when you've got all this. But yeah, I just think it's
maybe you should turn it around. Difficult one. Let the VAR actually have more power. They're the ones who aren't in the fire pit of the stadium. They're supposed to be free from that pressure and can just weigh those decisions rather than them going and putting it back on the referee to watch it. You make the decision. You've got the technology. The technology is needed. You can say, we'd probably be disagreeing with the Curtis Jones one because the VAR would have sent him off. But at least
they'd be making the decision.
They're making the decision.
I think that's important as well in terms of the full context. I don't like, personally, I don't know how there's a way around this, but I don't like the idea that the VAR will watch the game with no sound, with no commentary, with nothing. Whereas the referee, in real time, he's got the full context of the game. Again, you shouldn't really take into context what the other players' reactions were or what the fans' reactions were. But I think on the Curtis Jones one, I know you mentioned before the fans see the replay and then reacted to it. But no one at the moment that tackle went in, no one's going, that's a red card. I think Curtis Jones, maybe in his mind, is thinking I might be in trouble here because he starts saying it's not even a yellow. It's definitely not a yellow to try and sort of get ahead of that. But I think usually if there is a bad tackle, you can tell pretty much straight away by the reaction of everyone else, whereas VAR isn't, obviously. It doesn't have that within that context. Yeah. It just takes it purely as an isolated incident.
The fact that we're all having this conversation, though, just to me, again, underlines how difficult it is to introduce VAR to football. You know, there's a million different ways you could look at it. There's a million different, you know, you've just said, let the VAR ref the game. But that seems extreme, doesn't it? It to me, I think factual ones and offside, you know, this error, again, I think it should be, you know, I think Jackie Oatley said today, why don't they say check complete, goal, you know, number seven onside, so that is clear exactly what he's saying the check is complete about. But these sorts of things should have been implemented. Why not for factual ones like offsides and goal line, you have technology, and otherwise you let a referee a game and don't introduce several other people. And how many people does it take to referee a game? You've got to accept that isn't going to be
six
perfect.
Six isn't enough, apparently.
Yeah. Well, we talked before coming on air, Sean, I think you mentioned it actually, so I'll bring it to you. Ange Postecoglou after the game, I think he's been spun a little bit, but they basically said to him, what do you think? And he said, I don't like VAR. We accepted that it wasn't perfect. I don't think we did accept it wasn't perfect, did we?
No, and this is why I think you can't put the genie back in the bottle fully, can you? And do away with it, like in the sense of just jibbing it completely, because what happened before was, you know, after virtually every game, this is the thing that people say now, after every game all we're talking about is refereeing errors and VAR. I think to
that's
a large
all we ever talked about.
Well that's it, you know, that was happening. Well, and
we would have been anyway in this case, because Luis Diaz was flagged as being offside, so he would have been ruled out anyway.
Although I suppose he then wouldn't have, if they raised the flag straight away, like in old money rules, he wouldn't have put it in the net, would he? But I know what you mean. But the other thing I think now, and you've seen this kind of to the nth degree with City and Liverpool, but like I think you have to find a way of improving on what we used to have in the kind of analog referee age, if you like, because there's so much money in football. You've got teams who can get 90 plus points, and one decision literally can define a title race. I know sometimes it's like retrospective, isn't it? At the end of a season, fans will look back and go, well, that's the one that cost us. That's not quite how it works. But in the sense of Liverpool and City, when you're getting 98, 99 points sometimes, that kind of is how it works. And that's the game now. And that's why I think all this, you know, I think tribalism has reared its head since Liverpool put out their statements. On Saturday, you had fans of all clubs, even, you know, Everton United kind of saying, you know what, Liverpool have been hard done by there. There needs to be consensus around thinking about what we can change now. Well, you know, Liverpool's statement is, in my view, for the good of everyone. There was maybe a little bit of hyperbole in it around, you know, we're assessing our options. What realistically can they do now in that respect? Well, okay, nothing that changes the result or the outcome, but the process and how things are managed has to be on the agenda going forward. And I think all fans have to get behind that.
Yeah, I mean, but you've brought us onto it, Theo, the statement, obviously, last night. No ads. So I got that, read it on my phone, put my phone away. And I didn't look at social media the rest of the night, so I didn't realise there was this complete meltdown until this morning when I woke up and saw Doyle tweeting about tribalism. I thought, where's that come from? But yeah, I mean, what did you initially make a Liverpool statement? Like, Sean, do you think it was fair enough? Do you think there was a bit of hyperbole in there, or you know, there's a lot of people seeming to suggest that they were asking for a replay. I just didn't read it like that.
Yeah, I don't read there's any suggestion of a replay. Like, they'll know, you're talking about integrity of the game, you kind of have to respect the result. Yeah. At the same time, it's gone, you have to stomach it. But that doesn't mean they can't want better in the game going forward. Like, I wrote in a piece yesterday that this decision needs to be that one that changes things, that this is this mistake too far. It's probably the worst officiating mistake in Premier League history. Yeah. So this is the one where you look at yourselves and go, what can you change? Maybe Liverpool could look at it financial side of things. Like, say they miss out on a title by 1 point again, that point cost them. Or they miss out on the Champions League, how much money that would cost them. But that is something that you look at months down the line, and that would open up a whole different can of worms. Yeah. Or what a club's going to do if they can sue for decisions like this. It needs to be more, let's turn this into a positive. Let's strive to make the game better. And it needed someone to say it. It was a strong statement from Liverpool. But it's what, 14 apologies now about VAR? Something ridiculous like that. There's so many things they are getting wrong. Something needs to change. And you needed someone like that to come out and say it. Because it would have been so easy to just go, oh, they made a mistake. We're a bit annoyed about it on the day, but the show goes on. No, you can't keep accepting it. It can't keep happening week after week with us having these conversations week after week.
That's what it is, isn't it, Matt? You know, I watched Sky at the weekend, and Gary Neville, who hilariously has tweeted, like, why are Liverpool doing that? Spent the entire night on his soapbox about VAR. you know, words like incomprehensible are thrown around. We need an explanation. We need to be told more. An apology, is an apology really enough? All, you know, like he was saying it, Lineker said it, Shearer said it, every pundit, Redknapp was on the show, they all said it, you know, every pundit saying it. But then as soon as Liverpool go, yeah, yeah, we agree, so we're going to ask for more, they go, oh, Dad, you can't, you've got to accept it. It's part of the game. Why? Don't cry it in, you know, like just move on. And I find that utterly bizarre. If it's good enough for Sky to debate for days on end, and they'll be debating this for the next several weeks, so will we. You know, we're the media, that's what we do. And, you know, the same for certain other journalists in other places who seemingly sort of, I don't know, a bit condescending about it. They will debate it. I'm sure they'll write columns about it. I'm sure it'll be on their websites and in their newspapers. But Liverpool are the ones with the biggest stake in this. So why shouldn't Liverpool ask questions?
Yeah, I think Liverpool had to say something. I'm not quite sure what more they could have said or what more they could have done, really. I think it was the right thing to say something and not just ignore it and let the conversation take place without it. I mean, in terms of what can change, it's tricky other than what we've spoken about in terms of the VAR protocols, I think can be cleaned up. I mean, I've seen all sorts of ridiculous shouts of like, just sack all the officials. Well, okay, what do we do then, lads?
Still a lucky dip before the game, one fang and
Joey Barton could ref it. I mean, we could get ex-pros in, we could get all the ex-players in, they could come in and ref it. They know about football. No one else knows about football.
Let's take away the rest completely and go back to the Tudor times where it's just a bloodbath. 50 versus 50.
But yeah, no, I think Liverpool were right to do the statement, but it's a case now of what happens next, isn't it? What do the PGMOL do to change their processes? What happens with Darren England and, you know, various others in terms of the next few weeks? I know they've been taking off games and things like that. I mean, it just feels like something has to change. I'm not quite sure what that is and what the next step is. But I think, yeah, there's definitely going to be a few more eyes on Howard Webb.
Like, the issue is, it's all, remember what it used to be like in the good old days. We keep looking back. Technology is here now. Embrace it. It needs to be improving for the future. Even if we weren't having all these debates and it was going relatively smoothly, technology is only going to get better and better. So the game needs to move forward and embrace it more and more to get it into a state where we're not talking about the decisions. The errors aren't there and it is in a better position. So going back to what it was like 10 years ago, that is a massive step backwards. And we're still having the same debates. We're still looking at the referees going, how have you come to that decision? And arguably more pressure is on them because they then don't have the technology. It's just, you need to look forward and find a way to implement it better.
As a part of that, I don't know exactly how this is going to work, but I know they've been experimenting with automated offsides and things like that. I think things like that will help, and there are, you know, improvements that can be made, but you don't want to leave in the meantime, you know, as we said before, the kind of space for conspiracies to start brewing, or, you know, sort of there's things that they can do now which will instantly improve that process and improve just the transparency of it, which I think is probably what we're asking for, isn't it? When we say change, I think that's probably a realistic thing that we can aim for.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Sean, before we move on from refereeing decisions, one more I want to discuss, Theo. You mentioned it before, Van de Ven. I've just watched that quite a few times back, and obviously, you know, at the time thought, ooh, but watching it back, you know, the Van Dijk one the other week at Newcastle, you know, wins the ball quite cleanly, but catches a bit of the man. So they said, well, you've caught the man, sending off decision. The Van de Ven one, watching it back, it was clumsy. He runs into Gomez. He makes quite a lot of contact. He does maybe just about, don't think it's conclusive, get a slight touch toe on the ball. But is that not the same situation? Are we not talking about two of the same things?
Similar. I mean, I'd have to watch it back again. My initial instinct was that it was a bit more around the man, whereas I thought Van Dijk's was kind of through the man. To be honest, I was in the camp of, if you look at Liverpool's four red cards this season, which I can't believe I'm saying already, after seven Premier League games, I thought the Van Dijk one was fairly cut and dry. And I can understand why him as a player at the time would have been livid, because he felt that he got the ball. Yeah. But, you know, I don't think you can argue with it being denial of a goal scoring opportunity. And to be honest, I would just look at all of the other three ones. And, you know, I've said my piece on Curtis one already. The McAllister one was obviously mad and got overturned. The Jota one only got himself to blame for the second yellow, but the first one was not a yellow. Yeah. And I know
they VAR.
Can't
overturn. Yellow's kind of a ridiculous rule.
This is it. But I just think, you know, I said at the time after the McAllister one, And I've slightly moved on to the red cards now, but I'll go with it. Yeah. I thought at that point, Liverpool, that it was actually the best thing, not the best thing that could happen to them, but there was a way to make it a positive, and that was you got other players on the pitch, you know, Endo came on, didn't he, and stuff like that. There was, you could see literally as the game played out, like the mentality and the togetherness building, and, you know, indignation, they took that forward, they got the results, and they carried on. Albeit after this game, they didn't get the results. I think if they'd held on for like what would have been one of the great points in Liverpool history, then it would have been brilliant. But everything Klopp can and should say after that game doesn't change. You know, it, rather than look what nine men did, they got a point. It's look what had to happen to your team for a team to beat you. Yeah. You know, you had to go down to nine. You had to have a perfectly good, legitimate goal ruled offside. You had to have one red that was, you know, we've all agreed, I don't think we think it was a red, and another one where it shouldn't have been a second yellow, you know. And that's the message Liverpool have to take forward. Whether there's other minor-ish ones in the game where you can quibble about, I think there probably are. But, you know, if any club can turn this into a positive, it's one led by Jürgen Klopp.
Well, we will discuss that in a moment. Thanks for ruining the order there, Sean. But I asked you about penalty incident. But before I do, I just want one final word on referees, which should go to you, Matt. Why do you do it? And I don't mean that in like a, but it's a serious question, you know. I think what people forget about this, and a lot of people going, England should be sacked, and so a lot of nasty things being said on the internet, which is what generally happens on the internet. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago that I think a referee was threatened, beaten up in Merseyside. These things happen at grassroots level. So we do need to think of how to make the process better to protect these people, because not many people stick their hands in the air. Joey Barton might, but not many people stick their hands in the air to get involved and do these things. Fair play to Joey. But why do you do it? What do you get out of it?
For me, I really enjoy doing it. I did a thing a few months ago where Michael Oliver was speaking, and he said, and I thought he put it perfectly, if you like football, probably 9 out of 10 people would hate refereeing, but 1 out of 10 would absolutely love it. So I think everyone should give it a go, have a bit of a try of it. I think it is, you know, it's a difficult job, but it's something that I find rewarding. I find it exhilarating. I think when you make a big call, or if there's a last minute decision that you decide the course of the game in terms of you getting that call right, I think there's a real buzz about it. I think it's, you know, a really enjoyable thing for me. I appreciate it's not for everybody, but I think this does, you know, play an important part of, we all think that refereeing standards have to be better, but the only way that refereeing standards get better is that more people do it. The reason it's so hard to become a Premier League footballer is because everyone plays football. Yeah. The standards are therefore much higher. If no one wants to be a referee, then obviously the standards at the top are not going
to
be quite
what
as good.
What level are you up to on your reffing?
Because of my job and obviously the commitments that I have, I can't sort of go much higher. So I'm right at the bottom in terms of the levels. It might be something that I progress up and move up the levels as we go along, but for me it's a hobby, and it's something that I just enjoy doing. But I don't think that the conversations, particularly, you know, this season and maybe since VAR has come in, around almost vilifying referees, I don't think that helps anyone. I think it's a bit inevitable in terms of sort of the celebrity kind of element of it. You know, probably no one knew what Darren England looked like about 2 or 3 months ago, but he's now in the Premier League. He's had this. He's probably on the back pages of all the newspapers. Yeah. So it's hard to get that balance right. But I think if anyone enjoys playing football, you should give it a go. And I think as a kind of group of people collectively who enjoy playing football, we've got a responsibility really to help young referees get into it. You know, we need more people to do it. The only way that you do that is to make it an environment where people want to do it. It's really that simple. If we want refereeing standards to get better, it's up to the game as a whole, I think, to make that happen.
You're going for Howard Webb's job here.
Well this is it. Like, we've just allowed the ref to you know, speak freely and show their human side. I think there's a bit of a lesson there.
I didn't know he had a human side. So are you going to apologise?
Well said. If Howard Webb's listening, I'd love to get involved with something where we could do a bit more of this transparency and we could talk. And it doesn't have to be Darren England or Michael Oliver. It can be anyone who's kind of got that understanding of it and can sort of explain it to people. I think the explanation is quite often what I find when I'm refereeing, is that sometimes you'll give a decision and you know it's correct, but nobody else knows that it's correct. Mm. And that's the hardest thing.
Yeah.
There was one, I did a game over the weekend, for example, where a penalty was given, that the penalty was correct. No one had an issue with that. But as the penalty was struck, one of the attackers came inside the D. The ball went straight into the goal, and all of the team who saw this attacker come into the D were like, well, it's got to be ruled out because he was infringing. It's not relevant. He didn't become involved. He didn't become active. The ball went straight into the goal. If the goalkeeper had saved it and had come back to him and he'd have scored, then it would have been. But you've got to have those conversations and sort of explain those things to people. There was one probably last weekend as well. Curtis Jones got injured against West Ham, had to go off the pitch because he'd had treatment and nobody understood why he had to be off the pitch for so long. Well, it's a new rule that they've brought in this season that they've got to be off unless the tackle that caused the injury is worthy of a yellow or red card. They have to be off for 30 seconds to discourage time wasting, cheating, people going off the pitch.
Isn't there that story of Jose Mourinho getting like Terry and Carvalho to both go down? Because if it's two down, then you don't go off. They have to wait for you to be better.
I think that possibly might have been the case previously. I don't know whether
20 years
it is
now. Ago, that one.
I think the one way you could get around it is the goalkeeper can go down because obviously you can't play 30 seconds without a goalkeeper. That would be unfair.
That's fascinating, isn't it? And that is a good reason why, you know, we should have more transparency. You know, you've obviously just offered Howard Webb a column with the Echo, which we'll take. And even I love the way as well, as you've grown in your refereeing stature, Sean's taking the mic and now he's holding the mic for you.
I'm like the VAR. I'm growing into this role. I'm enjoying it, to be honest.
So fair play. Let's just move on. Just talk a bit about the performance because not enough, I think, has been said. And Sean, you said some good stuff when you ruined the order before. But in general, the performance, Theo, was exceptional, wasn't it? I mean, like in terms of a spirited performance, and I know they went one at Newcastle, they beat Bournemouth recently, and they've obviously come back from goals down and stuff like that. But I can't really remember being as proud of a team as I did on Saturday evening.
Yeah, as Sean said, it was like it would have been one of the best points they've ever won. Mm. And like we've seen them celebrate lesser points, like the West Brom one's the one that comes to mind. This would have been like that pinnacle there. This is where you show it to future Liverpool players, future fans, and you'd all remember it. It's like everything that could go against Liverpool did go against Liverpool, and it took the final seconds and own goal to actually rob them of what a point that would have had them second in the league. You are proud of them for being resilient. And it wasn't the fact that they just went and did what so many clubs would do. Oh, we're down to 10 men. We're just going to defend now. But they tried to attack. They got the goal after falling behind. They never gave up. And it was only when Jota got sent off that they thought, oh, shut up, shop a bit here. Like, Nunes was ready to come on before Jota got sent off. They were going to throw the dice, gamble again, and see if they could repeat what happened at Newcastle. And considering Liverpool was so much lacking this fighting spirit last year, like every little setback, oh, we're down and out now, we're falling behind in the fifth minute, we're going to lose this 3-0 now. Yeah. But that's gone completely. They've signed these new players, they've brought this energy, got the right attitude. They're all in it. It's such a group at the moment. Like, we saw Nunes at the final whistle. Doesn't even get on, whether he's wanting to have it out with the referee or he's banging his chest in front of the fans. There was Endo won a free kick later on. I think he got elbowed in the face or something.
Yeah.
And you had Szoboszlai and Trent like spurring the fans on, hammering their chest. Like, it means so much to these players. And it's strange that you could say after a defeat, oh, this means Liverpool the real deal now. Like James Maddison came out and said how it was a hard fought win for them. It shouldn't be that difficult against nine men. Liverpool made it difficult. Yeah. And they've had to do it the hard way so many times this season. And for all of them, they've come through it and got the points. This was the first time they didn't, but this was that time where you confirmed they've got the mentality, monster spirit back. They will be right at the top end of the table come the end of the season, without a doubt. Like, they're better than Tottenham. You know, you'd say they're going to be at least the second best team in this league. If they'd won on Saturday, they'd have been top. And then we're all thinking, oh, Liverpool can just go on an amazing run now and do what they've done in the past. And what makes it even more exciting is this is step one. Klopp said it a few times. He doesn't know what to expect this season. He doesn't know how far they can fly. It's going to take time. Well, if this is step one, we could be at the start of another great Jurgen Klopp side.
Yeah, I mean, big part of that, Matt, is that they've signed. There's been a lot of talk about the way Liverpool signed players. A lot of people upset about certain elements of the transfer process at Liverpool. But what they have signed is characters, haven't they? You know, yeah. You look at Szoboszlai, you look at McAllister, you look at Nunes, and these are people, Gakpo, I think, could go into that. They are characters, and then people like Trent have grown into more of a role. I think Van Dijk is relishing the captaincy. Alisson is obviously awesome. These are players who you feel like mentality monsters is thrown around quite often now, but there's a bit about that about them, isn't there?
Yeah. I think it was really interesting the way that they reacted collectively to going a man down first, and you know, even just something as simple as last season. I don't think that would have happened mentally, but physically as well. I mean, yeah. Dominic Szoboszlai, like, basically every game does the running of two players, even if they're not down to 10 men. He's so incredible. He's incredible. Just a remarkable.
Like diagonal passes as well. Yeah. Just the quality, yeah. The ability.
Yeah, the ability to do that, having just sprinted 50 yards to get there and then keep your composure and then do that. I think that's. You don't really see that many players where they combine both of those elements. It's really interesting that he can do that. I mean, McAllister as well is not one that you typically think of as being able to get about the pitch, but he's physically able to do that. So in both ways, it's just a complete transformation from last season in terms of the mentality, the physicality, their ability to do that. And I think, like you said before, it makes you feel proud of them. It makes you feel like they collectively know that they've been wronged here. I'm sure Brighton as well, they got absolutely hammered, didn't they, against Aston Villa over the weekend. Yeah. So next weekend, they'll both want to bounce back. But I think for Liverpool, you know, even when they play Tottenham at Anfield, I mean, just imagine what the crowd is going to be like, what the players are going to be like. I think there's definitely something in that you kind of need that a little bit at certain times.
Yeah. This will be a game we look back on and go, this is the moment where... Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise you if they now went on a run of so many games. They're already on a run until what happened at the weekend. But I think this could be a real moment for them this season.
And Sean, the final word, maybe. I mean, it's a bit of a shame. They play Thursday. We haven't picked teams. We haven't done all that. But I think people will forgive us in the circumstances.
Yeah.
But, you know, they play Thursday. It's kind of annoying that they don't get back into Premier League action straight away. Because, like Matt said, Brighton obviously... will want to prove something, having just lost heavily. But Liverpool will be desperate. I mean, whoever's left standing for Liverpool but will be desperate to get back in there, won't they? And sort of just channel that injustice into a performance.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it does put a little bit more pressure on for that Brighton game, just because the unbeaten run has ended. And I think, don't know about you guys, but I looked at these two games, the two tricky away, Spurs and Brighton, thought 4 points from them, or better, obviously, and Liverpool are flying. Yeah. Whereas now I'm thinking, if it turns out to only be one, then going into an international break, you're left to stew on that a little bit, and it will be frustrating. But everything we've said about the messages and, you know, what should be being talked about in Kirby this week and the pride completely is true and all resonates. My thing is, I think Klopp has been slightly cheeky with the whole Liverpool 2.0, you know, year one stuff, because... Yeah. It's okay, the midfield, obviously, we've seen a complete transformation there. And, you know, Curtis has also emerged as an absolute key man now, and missing him for a few games is a bad one. But what the effect on all the other members of the squad and how it's re-energised them and set them a new challenge, you know, freshness in the dressing room and on the training ground, I think is a massive thing. And you can point at several players for that, but I think Matip's a big one, and that's why it was so unlucky that it was him slicing that cruel Oggy in at the end of the game, because I think he's been great when he's been called upon, and, you know, Joe Gomez the same. But as I say, you can look across the entire squad. So, yeah, just hope the second string, which I'm sure it will be on Thursday, does a job, and then it's a decent result at the weekend.
Well, Jones and Jota will have to start that one, because they'll be suspended for the weekend, you'd imagine. So that's a great chance. It's the only chance Jones is going to have to play for the next month, the Europa League.
That's
to
true.
Go and be a leader in that, show that's the spirit point. And bounce back and carry Liverpool over the line in something else.
Yeah. Indeed. And hopefully Cody Gakpo's injury isn't too bad, and Nunes.
I need to give him a word as well in his spirit. Like, you saw he was badly limped. He was already hurt before he gets that. He could have easily been down on the floor. Gets up and scores a great goal on the
turn. Goal. I mean, we haven't really spoken about much football, but I mean, again, Gakpo, the forwards have just consistently contributed this season, haven't they? You know, and whether if one of them isn't quite firing or is a bit unlucky, another one scores. And I thought Gakpo coming in, a lot of us thought Nunes could and should have started, but Gakpo came in and had a decisive say again. So incredible. We will leave it there, because I think we could sit here all day. Hopefully we've covered enough topics. We'll be back on Friday to talk about the Europa League and look ahead to Brighton, and probably still rant about referees. Gents, thanks very much. See you then. Ta-ra.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.